On this episode of Skeptico.
Her name is Ava, and she is the most extraordinary thing that's ever been invented.
How do you feel about her?
She's fascinating. When you talk to her, you're just through the looking glass.
Caleb just gets plopped into the middle of the singularity, which is the greatest scientific event of all time, and he's right at the center of it.
If you've created a conscious machine, it's not the history of man. That's the history of gods.
Stay with us for Skeptico.
Welcome to Skeptico, where we explore controversial science with leading researchers, thinkers, and their critics. I'm your host, Alex Sakaris, and on this episode, we're going to continue this little series we're doing, Skeptico at the Movies. This episode, it's Ex Machina. I actually looked this up. It's from Deus Ex Machina, Greek expression, God from the Machine. Quite an interesting idea and fitting for the movie. Again, I'm joined by the Grimerica folks, Darren, Graham, and Red. And on this one, I think we had a really interesting discussion. It's something that I haven't heard before related to this movie, and it has to do with whether the whole idea of strong AI and consciousness engineering is really possible. If you've listened to a lot of Skeptico, you probably know my opinion on that, but it was interesting to bounce this off of some other folks and kind of get a good dialogue going about that topic. Hope you enjoy our dialogue about Ex Machina. What shall we tackle next on Skeptico at the Movies? Darren, shall we grab your fabulous TV show?
Let's go with Graham's first.
Okay, Graham. So, Graham, do you want to take over? Tell us what film you selected and give us a little synopsis.
Sure. So, yeah, I selected Ex Machina or Machina. No, Machina, I think is what it's called.
Machina?
Yeah, but I like saying Machina for some reason.
I think it's Ex Machina, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, no, that's not what I've been hearing online. So, yeah.
Do the Spanish machina kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Anyways, this is a great story about basically about the singularity in a way about artificial intelligence reaching the levels of human consciousness. So this billionaire guy who runs like the world's biggest company would be equivalent to Google or even more so, which ironically they call Blue Book, which we can get into later. But he brings one of his lead coders over to his underground, out-of-the-way facility. It's this beautiful facility in the middle of the mountain. He's got this huge property of land, very beautiful. And he basically puts this guy through a Turing test with this beautiful robot-type thing, this beautiful android. And it's kind of a movie about consciousness and love and what, and this test on whether the robot is, has reached our level of intelligence and consciousness. And it's very interesting.
Okay, Graham, let me see if I can play that clip from exactly what you were talking about there, and feel free to talk over this thing if you want.
Sure.
Hi.
Her name is Ava, and she is the most extraordinary thing that's ever been invented.
How do you feel about her?
She's fascinating. When you talk to her, you're just through the looking glass.
Caleb just gets plopped into the middle of the singularity, which is the greatest scientific event of all time, and he's right at the center of it.
If you've created a conscious machine, it's not the history of man. That's the history of gods.
If you have created a consciousness in the body of a machine, that machine starts having the same kinds of rights that we do. For example, if you're imprisoning the machine and the machine doesn't want to be imprisoned, then suddenly it turns into an ethical question.
What will happen to me if I fail your test?
It's not up to me.
Why is it up to anyone?
Alex is a very intelligent and smart scriptwriter. All the time you question, you never know what's wrong or why, then you question the people around you.
What were you doing with Ava?
It really dives into what it means to be a human, what it means to think, and what it means to have consciousness, and how can you ever tell what the person in front of you is actually thinking, or if they think the same way that you do.
One day the AIs are going to look back on us the same way we look at fossil skeletons in the plains of Africa.
As Homo sapiens, we don't feel particularly bad about Neanderthal man or Australopithecus, which we replaced. If they're better than us, they're smarter and they live longer, who are we to say we're going to switch you all over?
Are you ever going to let me out?
Yeah, that's a great clip.
So, strong AI, what do you guys think?
Yeah, I think it's fascinating. It's fascinating to think that, you know, if we're not there yet, that we may be there fairly soon with the rate of technological advancements.
Of course, because we know so much about consciousness.
Well, it's pretty much a mirror image of what Google and Kurzweil are probably up to right now, right?
Yeah, but it's bullshit. It's total bullshit.
I don't believe it is bullshit.
I think it is. I mean, it's slipping into bullshit in a couple ways. So, you know, if you look at like the guys who are doing the quantum mind kind of stuff. So Stuart Hameroff is kind of most famous at the University of Arizona for kind of doing this stuff. And he came up and he peed all over the singularity stuff because he said, look, you guys are off by about two orders of magnitude in terms of the complexity because all this stuff is going down at a quantum level. This stuff is really happening. So that's why you don't have a handle on consciousness. But really, if you kind of pull apart the consciousness research, what the consciousness research is telling us is that no way, none of this stuff matters. Consciousness is somehow fundamental. It's consciousness first and matter second. So, you know, the double slit experiment is it becomes a wave or a particle based on whether you are observing it. So it's consciousness is creating matter. Over and over and over again. That's what it looks like. That's what the paradigm is shaping up to be. If that's so, all this is just silliness. I mean, great, you'll get your iPhone 40 or whatever, but the idea that you're going to get sentience in with these little bits of data all put together, it completely doesn't make any sense in terms. What it demands is a materialistic understanding of consciousness. And that's exactly what we're getting away from over and over and over again. And I think it's a really subtle, don't get me started. See, that's what I told you, man. I want to talk about these movies. I'll probably steal the mic here, but that's my take on it.
I don't know. I don't agree. Cause I think we're only one step away from finding some new technology that may have already been found in the black world. See, this is where I can't help but get conspiratorial because it's interesting how we've got trillions of dollars and billions of dollars. Good, Darren's already shaking his head over here. Going into research labs in the black world, and this all doesn't go through the government and get put out into the commercial world, right? So there's stuff going on. I mean, you can talk about the secret space program. You can talk about, black projects, you know, controlling some of the UFOs that are out there. There's all kinds of stuff going on and it overlaps with this type of thing. So interestingly enough, the lead character was from Brookhaven in the movie, and Brookhaven National Labs is pretty much a household name now. But just to put things into perspective and talk about the potential for a technological advancement, whether it's in the black or white world, Brookhaven National Labs was started in 1947, which is the same year as the CIA and the Roswell crash. So it's got one of the most powerful and biggest supercomputers in the world. Right now, over 3,000 scientists and support personnel work there at Brookhaven. I mean, we're talking about condensed matter physics and materials, computational and molecular biology, functional nanomaterials, high energy physics.
I'm with you. Yeah, go ahead.
So I don't think you're going to have all that research isn't going to sift back through the government, even though the Department of Energy owns this place. Like, what has been going on there for how many years now? Like 65, 70 years? Like, you know, I mean, I just don't think we get to see what's really going on. So I think we're closer to Ex Machina than you may think. And maybe they have a better idea of what consciousness is all about. I mean, you've had Grant Cameron on, right? These guys in the government were talking that consciousness is the key to UFOs and all kinds of stuff. Even Ben Rich, the head of Skunk Works, talked about that. Consciousness is the key about all this stuff. And they know it. I think they know more than we know.
What do you think, Darren?
I don't think I have different thoughts on the singularity and it's what it means in general anyway, but I don't think the movie Ex Machina, I don't think it's even really going into the singularity so much. It's just, I mean, eventually if you can link up the data and the knowledge that a search engine has about the way people think with what's that ringing?
So I'm sorry. Hey, Red, did you hear any of that stuff? Because we're talking about Ex Machina, I think.
See, guys, see? It's Machina, not Machina. God. No, I didn't hear anything.
Oh, okay. You just jump in, man. Just jump in whenever you see your shot. Now it's...
Okay, so I assume you're going to edit this.
I think I better.
Amy.
I think I'm better.
Okay, shit. You want to jump back in?
Yeah, jump back in there. Yeah.
Rewind a little bit, you know, why you think it's good.
Okay, I'll talk about the singularity in a second because I think that has totally different implications than what everyone else thinks. But I think the movie is more about a machine that's become smarter and obtained the ability to learn. And is able to outsmart humans and play emotions and do whatever to manipulate and do whatever it needs to do to get out of its cage so it can,
I don't think the movie ever really shows if the machine, you know, if Ava actually has emotions. Or maybe she's just simulating the emotions to get what she wants, which is, you know, out of her prison.
Yeah, that's exactly what I think. I think it's all simulated.
So you don't think the consciousness has to be involved?
No, and I
don't.
I think that's the problem with super intelligent.
So I saw the movie two days ago, and I think that what the movie portrays is our main problem with the issue of consciousness. You know, it revolves around the famous or infamous Turing test. The Turing test is whether a human subject will be able to interact either with a machine or with another person, and he or she has to decide whether that person is, you know, alive or not. And if he or she has managed to be fooled by the machine, apparently the test is passed, and you have to conclude that the machine possesses artificial intelligence. But I think that my main problem with the Turing test is that it highlights how our total ignorance about what consciousness is. You know, it boils down to the idea of I don't know, ergo you are, you know?
Yeah, that's kind of what Alex was saying earlier, is that how can we even get to the singularity when we can't define consciousness?
But I don't think AI needs to be conscious. That's the problem. It'll be completely cold and emotionless. It'll just be a super intelligent machine. So I think we're a lot closer to AI than we are to the singularity per se. Like AI could be, you know, I honestly think it could be, and you know, within a couple of the next few decades, it's just going to happen one time. And then what happens next? Who knows?
AI?
I think that the problem with that approach is that it's too 50s sci-fi. You know, I know you, obviously the Trekkie among us, the guy who thinks that a machine will be closer to what Mr. Spock is portrayed in the Star Trek universe, is what we should expect of a machine intelligence. But I think that's totally wrong.
No, I'm thinking closer to the Matrix.
Well, let me finish. I mean, the thing is that in that movie, the guy who creates Ava, Nathan, he tells the other guy, I think his name was Caleb, that the reason why he decided to create an AI with a specific gender and with emotions is because without emotions, there is no drive to move forward, to push forward, and to grow intellectually or, you know, emotionally. You know, without emotions, a conscious entity would be completely stagnant. Well, that is the position that Ex Machina takes, and I think that is closer to the truth. I think that in the end, AIs will have to be either programmed or you know, by emergence, they will have to grow emotions of their own in order to to have this desires or to have ambitions or to have a purpose of their own.
Yeah, but that gets into all that, all the mishmash of bullshit that I guess I react against. It's like, let's remember that what is being jammed down our throat, you know, if I can kind of repeat my age old thing, is you're a biological robot in a meaningless universe. So, right? Mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. This is science's position, so that the folks behind the singularity model can never be more than that, right? So Ex Machina, or the strongest AI, can never be more than a biological robot. Well, there's the falsehood right there. None of us believe that bullshit. Of course we're more. We don't know how we're more or in what way we're more, but we're so far from being able to understand that I think the whole enterprise of sentience and learning and emotions. I mean, think about that. What a mangled idea that human beings don't really have emotions, you know? Red, mm-hmm. You don't really have emotions. That's just mm-hmm. the random firing in the chemical neurosoup in your brain. And then, well, could we replicate that in a machine? I mean, that's the kind of dialogue we're having. I think it's silly.
Let me ask you this, Alex. You know, I think that it's obvious to anyone who's even listened to only one episode of Skeptico that you firmly believe, and I agree with you, that consciousness is a fundamental principle of the universe, that consciousness predates matter, or somehow matter emerges from consciousness and not the other way around.
Right. In some way we don't understand, but
exactly.
If you had to place your bets,
okay,
right.
Okay, okay, mm-hmm. Okay.
So some people think that the consciousness that manifest, for lack of a better word, you know, maybe not manifest in our brains, is the result of the high complexity that is present in the brain of a human being. So, in other words, if there is a high level of complexity in the more level of complexity in matter, the higher level of consciousness it can manifest or tune in. So the idea then is whether you could build a positronic brain or a quote-unquote mechanical brain that could tune in into the consciousness of the universe as well, or even better than the biological brain. And that is something that I myself question.
Yeah. Is what, at what point can we develop something so advanced that actually consciousness comes to it?
Yeah, that's something that I think that
this 3D print still of all of fucking.
What's that about 3D printing?
You just 3D print a ball of fucking mucus. Yeah.
Okay, so let's go down that path for a minute. Mm-hmm. So there is this. Well, in simple terms, we're using the kind of TV model, right? So there's this field of consciousness. Those are like the airwaves, and then they come in and they're tuned by this physical instrument that we have in our head, and it becomes conscious. Well, okay, if I go down that path and I accept that model, which I'm not sure I can, because there's this transcendent quality that is behind all this, right? Mm-hmm. So we can't remove ourselves from that. And it just doesn't seem to work that way. I mean, it seems like such a stretch. I'll just interject. The first thing that pops in my mind is near-death experience, right? Okay. So the knowledge that we have, the science we've accumulated on near-death experiences, allows us to say with a large degree of confidence that it's a real medical phenomena. It's a mystery because these people have a non-functioning brain and their consciousness seems to be acting the same way that it does when they do have a brain, or maybe even a little bit better. So then at that kind of level, it makes you kind of question if we were able to get to any kind of point and that consciousness could interact with that, whatever we created. So what? I mean, how is that significant, given the fact that as soon as you're outside of your body, that seems to be what people what near-death experiencers say over and over again is that that's reality. And this mm-hmm. is the simulation. This life yep. we live is the simulation. That's yep. realer than real. So mm-hmm. why mm-hmm. all this concern and worry about what isn't real anyway in terms of this experience? And of course it's real, but you get what I'm saying.
Well, it's important because that's the singularity. Like if you could upload consciousness to, you know, some highly technological advanced structure,
then you can upload it to anything.
There's nothing to upload, guys. I mean, go back to at least stay within Red's model. It's a field out there, and you're going to tune into it. So you're talking about building a tuner, okay? I'm with you on that.
Yeah, but we have a soul that connects to that as well. Let's say so. Let's take the reincarnation thing, and there's evidence showing that could be real, right? That could be there's something to that along with near death experience. So when you're in this limbo spot between lives, let's say. What if there's an option to go into some technically developed body as opposed to the next one in line that's human?
This reminds me of something. Have you guys read Whitley Strieber's book, The Key?
No, I haven't.
No.
Well, I encourage you to do so. It's a very short book. So this is a supposed encounter that he himself had in Canada doing a book tour with this enigmatic guy who, you know, basically entered his hotel room in the middle of the night. And, you know, they had this very long conversation that he tried to transcribe after this individual left. And that's the basis of the book. And so this person, this entity, if you want to call it, because it's not entirely clear whether he was human or not, he tells Whitley that in the end, what happened here on Earth or in the universe is that through the process of evolution, nature managed to create complex enough organisms that they could grow souls. And that's us. So this idea speaks of some kind of underlying order in the universe towards ever higher forms of complexity. And out of those forms of complexity, it reaches some kind of point in which what, if you want to call a soul, inhabits a biological organism. And then if you think about that, then you could also entertain the idea that a mechanical and not a biological organism could also grow what you might want to call a soul.
Hmm. Yeah, that's kind of...
And I'm not saying that I'm totally buy this scenario, you know. I'm a person that also rejects... The underlying force behind this push toward the singularity, the singularity is inherently materialist.
Exactly.
These are people who these are people who cannot. They are scared shitless about dying, so they want to try to preserve their individual consciousness. And that's kind of a really lame approach to the singularity. I even posed that question to Dr. Christopher Ryan when Darren and Graham had him on the Graham Erica show. How we could try to envision a push towards singularity that wasn't grown out of selfish individualisms. And I think that there are other avenues to the singularity. One example is the first Star Trek movie in which the Bajor, this apparently alien entity that comes to planet Earth and is threatened to destroy all mankind, the Enterprise is sent to make contact with it, and then they find out that is the Voyager space probe that was, you know, somehow retrofitted by an AI intelligence, to return to their creator. And during that process, you know, that long, long voyage, the Voyager probe becomes self-conscious and manages to learn everything that is to learn about the universe. But then the machine comes into a standstill because it needs more. It needs to go to grow beyond the constraints of matter, and for that, it needed to meld with a human, and that from that grows a new form, a new life form, you know, a new form of consciousness. And I think that that kind of not non-individualist approach to the singularity, the idea that by melding the human consciousness with the machine consciousness, and by in that process getting rid of the ego, the human ego, that might be a very interesting transpersonal form of the singularity that might be the right approach to move forward as a species.
See, I think it's a huge sideshow, a distraction. It's, you know, it's climate change, you know, it's just something to distract you from what's really going on. I mean, I compare the whole singularity hype. I lay that next to enlightenment, right? So extra consciousness realms that people achieve, right? But let's go all the way and say, and talk about enlightenment, spiritual enlightenment, right? I mean, they have a lot of same characteristics. There's this incredible, all-knowing kind of sense. But then there's also these deep, deep emotions, you know, deeper than anything you can experience in this plane. And there's all this other stuff. I mean, to me, and that's a reality today, at least if you believe the thousands of people who come back and report kind of similar experiences, whether it's through Kundalini or prayer or whatever, you know, there's this enlightenment, awakening experience to this greater consciousness. I mean, when you look at it that way, the whole singularity thing seems incredibly dorky. I mean, here is this whole path that is all well laid out. It's well laid out in all the literature for thousands of years. It seems to have a limitless range in terms of where it goes. And yet, you know, I forget who said it in this roundtable, but, you know, no, we want to, you know, protect ourselves and stay inside our little cage here of where we're in control of everything, and our little phones and computers are doing everything. So let's just think about it in terms of how we can put these circuits into a robot thing. I don't buy it.
Singularity is right now the rapture of the nerds.
But I think there's a difference, like what Darren was talking about earlier, between artificial intelligence and singularity, right? If we're talking about just, you know, when a computer becomes more intelligent than a human.
I think all it needs is the ability to learn. Once it has the ability to learn, then it's just fucking all bets are off. Who knows what'll happen next? And it could happen very, very quickly, or it could happen very slowly.
Well, of course, there is a machine that is more intelligent than a human. And my reply is that there are many types of intelligence. There is the intelligence, you know, to try to solve a differential equation in calculus. And then there is the intelligence of someone like Michael Jordan, who can, in milliseconds, figure out the right kind of moves he has to make in order to fool Charles Barkley and slam dunk.
Oh, man, you are out of date on your NBA. Come on, I got to get Steph Curry.
That's when I stopped watching basketball. And if you tell me that there is a better player than Michael Jordan right now, you know, I'll start rewatching the NBA, but I'm sure you can't.
Steph, baby, Steph. Steph Man. Curry, Steph Curry as futuristic.
Curry, yeah, he's pretty good.
Michael Jordan is a god.
I still can't, you know, help but go back to what's happening in the black world. Red, before you came on, I was talking about Brookhaven National Labs, because I find it coincidental that the guy's company's name is Blue Book, the biggest, you know, computer tech company in the world.
Oh, yeah. It was very metaphorical in the sense that many people think that the first alien intelligence that we will encounter is the one that we create ourselves in a lab.
Yeah. Yeah, and then it's also So, anyways, I think that
also there's about, the fact that in the movie, sorry for interrupting you, that they say that the Blue Book were search engine is named after the Blue Book's notes by this philosopher by the name of Wittgenstein, I think was the name.
So this, I missed that.
Yeah, so this guy, and I don't know sure if you do your homework as you should have done, is a philosopher who once said something very interesting. Said, if a lion was able to speak English, we wouldn't understand him. You know, to try to show how it's so difficult to communicate with an intelligent species that evolved either in a different environment than yours, or following a different ecological orientation, right? So people in the UFO camp think of how they want to try to talk to aliens. You know, even people in SETI, they want to use math to try to talk to aliens. And even the idea that Wittgenstein, this philosopher, poses is even if those aliens in Proxima Centauri or Andromeda Strain were able to talk in plain English, you will still not be able to understand a single word they're saying. I put you an example. If someone who had lived 200 years ago was able to somehow read TV digest, you know, or some magazine from our era, even if it was in the same language, English or French or whatever, they wouldn't be able to understand a single thing, a single paragraph, because they are not privy to the context in which everything is related to.
Huh. Well, you'd have to hang out with them for a couple months. You know, you couldn't just teach them English and expect them to know right away. You got to, like, let them gel,
let
them get to know the slang.
If you could try to engage in a conversation with a very smart aunt who could speak English, do you think you would have anything to talk about?
I don't know. It depends how long you lived with me. I don't see why. If something had any sort of level of intelligence, then I mean, you could probably learn to speak English. Eventually, it could learn to communicate with you. Maybe not right off the bat, but I mean, I got two kids that couldn't speak nothing when they came out, and it's just, you know, it doesn't take them long. Might take a little longer with something else, but I don't see why it wouldn't be possible.
What about those, the Mowglis and the world, the Tarzans? You know, people, those children who were raised by animals in the jungle, and then they were trying to get reintegrated in society, and they couldn't.
No, yeah, they're feral. But, they need to be put down.
Doesn't this get back to it gets back to the same complaint I have with the basic premise. We don't have a freaking clue about consciousness. And then we march off, we make all these assumptions, and we build on them and create all this ridiculous stuff. And I say, you know, if you want to stay, forget the Enlightenment, you don't want to go in the spiritual route, then just stay in the scientific realm in terms of what we already know about extended consciousness, right? So we know that after-death communication seems to be a real phenomenon, right? We have spontaneous after-death communication. We have assisted after-death communication. We have induced after-death communication. We have peer-reviewed papers on all of them. It just seems to happen. Well, in that realm, all that it answers all those questions, right? People talk to their dogs. People talk to their cats. People talk to aborted fetuses that never really embodied anything here. So you can make of that what you will, and you can, you know, dismiss it as anecdotal. But you can't dismiss the fact that after-death communication, as close as we've studied it, seems to be a reality. So if that then inclines you to maybe open yourself up to some of those possibilities, then all those questions are answered. Somehow, in some way we don't understand, consciousness at that realm figures it all out and makes all that stuff happen. And again, when we try and jam it into singularity, we run into, oh, you know, all these problems. How would that ever work out? Well, apparently it does work out.
Maybe consciousness doesn't manage to figure all out after they cross that veil. I mean, you guys can't lift your arm right now if you want to, but can you really explain all of the neurological and physiological processes that are involved in that simple physical act? No, you can't, but you can do it. I mean, nobody taught you how to do it, but you just can.
Well, I think just like Alex says, we don't have a clue about consciousness. We don't have a clue about where technology's at right now either. That's my point. No, I mean, really, we don't. There's decades of advancement ahead of what we see right now. So this movie might not be, you know, as far-fetched as we think. And I don't want to get too conspiratorial about movies either, but I'd like to know what you guys think about this because, you know, Hollywood seems to be coming out with all this kind of stuff we talk about, whether it's about, you know, like mass surveillance or, you know, UFOs or New World Order or consciousness and all. There's so many movies coming out about all this stuff. And, you know, part of that will discredit the phenomena and part of it will bring interest. And I wonder how much of that is.
I tell you what, let me cut you off right there. Guys, I think we only got time for one more movie. Can we do Mr. Robot? And we'll do this again. We'll do Interstellar next time. Is that going to work?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Okay.
Yeah,
so,
sounds good.
Thanks again to Darren and Graham and Red for joining me today on Skeptico. As was the case with the last movie, there's really only one question. What do you think of Ex Machina? And in particular, what do you think about Graham's point in the sense that might we be able to engineer something biological that was able to merge with this field of consciousness, whatever it is? I think that's kind of an intriguing idea and one that we might want to kick around a little bit in this after-show discussion. Of course, the place to join me in that discussion is through the Skeptico website at skeptiko.com. You can join the discussion in the forum or leave a comment or just send me an email, whatever you like. So we have one more episode of this initial blast of Skeptico at the Movies coming up. I'm probably just going to put it out tomorrow, so you can look for that and give a listen, see if that one sparks any thoughts on your part. Otherwise, next week we'll be back to the regular interview schedule. I forget who I have coming up next week, but I think it's a pretty good one, and I certainly hope you'll be joining me for that. Until next time, take care, and bye for now.